This episode of the Educated Ignorance Podcast is brought to you by the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Subscribe to the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network on your favorite podcast platform for the newest episodes of The Data Lab with Professor John Bush and Dennis Mickelson, as well as new episodes every week of Card Subject to Change, our new wrestling podcast with CZ and Nick. And three times a week, releasing episodes on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, the Educated Ignorance Podcast. On Mondays, you will get full breakdowns of the Sunday night football game, as well as a couple quick-hitting topics from some of the NFL action on Sunday. Tuesday will be a quick-hitting reaction of the Monday night football game, as well as a full slate review of the Sunday games, the biggest and broadest topics from the weekend of football, as well as some college football stuff. And, of course, that Tuesday will be the Elite Eight episode each week for the NFL season, where we reveal the top eight teams, according to myself, in the NFL. And then on Friday, we will be releasing each week a big kind of preview for the weekend's games coming up, as well as the Sinister Six podcast every week with Mac Fulton. He will be joining us every week for the Sinister Six, joint venture of NFL games and college games throughout the year. Our best six picks of the weeks. We will also have some betting stuff in there as well, against the spread, over unders, things like that. So stay tuned for those three episodes a week of the Educated Ignorance Podcast here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. All right, week four is in the books. We are here on Monday night to talk about this. Maybe not the most entertaining game, but it was fun. Ethan and Omar were over. Danny got home. We all got to hang out together and watch the game, which it was fun, and we enjoyed it. And, you know, the Niners giving me a nice 3-3 weekend on the Sinister Six, which we will take. So I want to start with the Rams. We'll get into the Niners and then talk about kind of what the Niners can look like as a whole. So the Rams right now, I think there might be more to take out of this on their end than San Francisco's. Listen, tonight was the night that proved why my principal bets are still, you know, it's why I live by the principle. Desperate team at home, they're going to do all it could take to win. And I just felt like they were going to be able to outman the Rams in these situations. And tonight they were able to. And this Rams offense right now is, it's why some people have been thinking, oh, maybe they're getting stuff figured out. Maybe they're moving in the right direction. And I've been pumping the brakes. I'm just like, I don't know. I can't buy into it yet. And tonight gave me all the more reason for pause. The biggest thing for them is their offensive line, but we'll get to that. The gross thing that is compared to last year is that their lack of weapons and explosiveness. Cooper Kupp last year was obviously fantastic from start to finish. But if you think about it, at the beginning of last year, Van Jefferson was making plays. He hasn't played it down yet this season. Robert Woods made plays at the beginning of the season. He got hurt middle of the year. And then they get Odell Beckham. And Odell, while granted, Odell took a few weeks to get going. They still had Van Jefferson. Things weren't smooth. That was when the Rams kind of dipped off a bit. But then Odell started cooking. And then in the playoffs, I mean, I think the first game last year where Odell was great was that comeback. They were down double digits in Baltimore. LOL, Baltimore blowing a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter at home. Shock. They were down double digits in Baltimore, and Odell just made big catch after big catch after big catch. He was sensational. And then in the playoffs, big plays against the Cardinals. He made a couple big catches against the Bucks. Didn't really make any against the Niners, but in the Super Bowl against the Bengals, that first half before he got hurt, it was all Odell. Odell was well on his way to winning Super Bowl MVP. The Super Bowl MVP that Cooper Kupp won, it was well on his way to be his, because they were doing so much to take Cooper Kupp away, and then everything Odell was getting was stuff they were taking away from Kupp and leaving him to be. And then when Beckham got hurt is when the Bengals clawed back into it and started to roll and took a lead, is because the Rams offense couldn't do anything. They couldn't run the ball. They had no other options other than Kupp that were dynamic, and they struggled to move the football offensively until that final drive. It just took everything they could to just force feed the ball to Kupp and to make plays happen, and they became Super Bowl champions. Their biggest issues this year have been, when it comes to weapons, no continuity. Allen Robinson comes in somehow after having multiple years of dog shit effort and dog shit production in Chicago. He comes in and gets signed to a multi-year deal, and there's no continuity with him and Matthew Stafford. And so far this season, it's not looked good. It has been all Kupp, and then with some Higbee sprinkled in. Higbee is the guy getting the secondary targets. Skowronek is getting targets. But none of those guys outside of Kupp are real dangerous. And even Kupp, you're not worried about him just going and blowing the top off of the defense. The reason that the Rams became so hard to, you know, became so hard to stop, you think at the beginning of last year, you have Woods and Kupp, two guys that Stafford did have rapport with, that he was able to thread at multiple levels of a defense, and then Van Jefferson to blow the top off. You then incorporated that when Woods went down with Odell. All three of those guys can blow the top off a defense, and all three of them were used at multiple levels. This year, teams aren't allowing stuff over the top against the Rams, but granted, that's just pretty much most teams in the league. No one's letting anything over the top. Copycat league, folks. And for the Rams, he's got no rapport with anybody. There's no guys that that teams are worried about beating them at other levels of the field other than underneath stuff to Higbee at tight end. It is all 10, 12-play drives for the Rams, and a lot of it's passing. Again, they can't run the ball right now. They're getting no production up front. They're getting no production from their running backs. And this is what the no running game and the no offensive line play falls together. Andrew Whitworth last year was a rock for that offensive line. Without him, it's been bad at left tackle. It's been a revolving door. Rob Havenstein is a really, really good right tackle, but there's been a bit of a drop-off in production. He's been getting everyone's best. And the Niners' D-line absolutely cooked all night long. They were running stunts up front. The edge rushers were teeing off. And the thing against the Rams, too, it's not only when you get a lead, you already know they're a team that's not going to really rely on running the ball. So and they're not creative in their run game as they used to be when they had guys like Todd Gurley and such. It's much more mellowed out, and their running game has just not been the same this season, even compared to last, because Darrell Henderson, when Cam Akers went down at the beginning of last year, Darrell Henderson was very dynamic for them. This year, it's just not been there. The running game has not been there whatsoever. But the offensive line is the biggest issue up front defensive fronts are able to know they can't run the ball, so they only have to bring four. They don't have to blitz. They can run stunts up front. They have their edge rushers tee off because they know they're going to get, if they get a lead, they know they're going to pass. In the majority of the game anyway, they know they're going to pass. And Stafford, too, hasn't been great. Stafford's been holding onto the ball too long. He hasn't been accurate enough. And maybe there's regression. I'm not sure. Could be an issue, and that's something to note. We'll see. But it's the reason why these last couple weeks they've been winning games. It's like they aren't impressing. They have not impressed whatsoever. There's some stuff about their defense I think that I like, but man, it's just this team is not what it was, and a division that a year ago might have been the best in the league is now very average, because the ceilings of all four teams in the league are drastically in this division, the ceilings are drastically lower than they were 12 months ago and beyond. We'll take a quick break, talk about the Niners next. Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island. All right, let's talk about the Niners. I don't know if we learned much about them tonight. I think we learned that offensively, they still are what they are. I think they got a lot of good schematics, and it was nice to see that they were able to protect well tonight. Now, granted, I did feel like offensively, up front, the Trent Williams injury wouldn't be as big of an issue in a game like this, because I don't think the Rams have the edge rushers like Denver did last week to really make that a problem, to make that a big issue. I want to start with the defense first. And I wish Nick Pearson was here, because D'Amico Ryan is Nick Pearson's boy. And D'Amico Ryan is a guy that definitely should be on the short list of next up to get an NFL job. And I think he will be. And nights like tonight just further implement that. Because, man, that defense was on it from the word go. Everything they called was right. They knew when to throw different stunts up front. They knew when to go after it up front. Every single decision that they made on the defense was really good. And they have elite guys at all levels. This is their defense, when you look at their, like, in 2019, when they made the Super Bowl, I think people were just, obviously their defense was loaded. I think this defense is almost as good as that. Now, were they better at DB? Yes, they were better at DB as a whole. But this defense still has some really high-level guys. When you look at guys like Emmanuel Mosley at corner, they went out and got Tre'Davious Ward at corner. And, of course, I think this guy, without question, is on the short list of All-Pro right now. Talanoa Hufanga, the safety from USC in his second year, this dude has been awesome the first couple weeks of the season. He got another interception tonight. I think that was his second. He's just everywhere. And he had that pick six. Great instincts. They ran the smoke screen to the right of the formation. Hufanga blew it up and pick sixed it. He's been great. Nick Bosa, I think, is the best edge rusher in the league. And up front, defensively, they've got guys like Samson Ebukam, Eric Armstead. They just got guys up front that can wreck games. And their linebackers, of course, Fred Warner, who is probably the best linebacker in the National Football League, Dre Greenlaw, Alizee Shaheer, they just loaded. And I love what they've been doing up front, and everything that they're doing on a game plan basis, on a week-to-week basis, has been great. Now, Al Shaheer is out right now. Greenlaw tonight was great. Greenlaw had 15 tackles. Warner had 9. They've had the got another guy that's been rotating in, the kid from Oregon, Diamador Lenore, who's, I think, second or third year guy at Oregon. He was good tonight at corner, kind of playing the nickel spot. That defense with D'Amico Ryans is just great. We talk about the pass rush. The thing that's so great about their pass rush with guys like Armstead, who's a game wrecker up front, and then Ebukam, who's a really good edge rusher. And then, of course, like I said, I think Nick Bosa is he is the standard in the NFL when it comes to pass rushing. Nick Bosa is second to none. You can give me your TJ Watts. Now, TJ Watt is a generational player. You can give me your Myles Garrett, who's right behind him. Micah Parsons, I think right now he's the best player in the league. He's been playing that way. But I think Nick Bosa right now is the best edge rusher in the league, and he just wrecks games constantly. Let's talk about the Niners' offense real quick. It wasn't special tonight, but it doesn't have to be. Now, granted, I think they have to take some steps, and hopefully they do that. Jeff Wilson, I thought, ran the ball really well tonight. This was the best I've seen him. He had 18 carries, 74 yards, and a touchdown. That Deebo Samuel touchdown, look, it was great. Deebo can make a play like that, but Jimmy did put the ball in a really bad spot, and they just it was just a bad situation. And Deebo just had to make an unhuman play in order for that to be, you know, in order for that to be something that worked. I am interested to see how this offense continues to navigate throughout the year, and I want to see how this offense continues to grow. I think it'll be important when Elijah Mitchell comes back to give him that double-headed monster running back. I think Trent Williams coming back is obviously a huge plus. Trent Williams is the best offensive lineman in the NFL. And as long as Jimmy can just, again, not the good game plan for Jimmy just has to be don't lose games. If you're the reason we don't, if you're, as long as you're the reason we're not losing a game, like if, as long as you don't lose us a game, Jimmy, then you're fine. I think that's the way for the Niners right now. And I need to see growth, though, offensively. I need to see when Jimmy continues to get comfortable. Again, this is the second full week for him since the NFC title game last year. He thought he'd be on another team by now. As we said, like, going into last week, you know, that was his first full week of number one reps, probably even practice reps when you think about it, since last January, or since this January. Tough to get back into that swing of things. That game in Denver, we all should have known that it was going to be rough. That's why I wanted to stay away from it. But this game, I had a feeling it would be better. And he wasn't perfect, but it was better. And they were able to get the win. Look, man, I think they're the best team in the NFC West right now. I would absolutely pick them over the field. But every team in that division is 2-2. But I do think there's a clear gap in each of those teams. I think there's a gap between the Niners and the Rams. I think there's a gap between the Rams and the Cardinals. And then I think there's a gap between the Rams and the Seahawks. Or the Cardinals and the Seahawks. So I think there's a gap between each of these teams. Each of these teams are in their own tier, I would say, in the NFL. Not the division it once was. Though the Cardinals could be sneaky. The Niners, I think, will win the division, and the Rams should be a wild card. But it's this NFC, man, so wide open. It's going to be whoever can get to 9 wins. It's going to be the race for 9 wins. All 4 of the teams in this division are a quarter of the way there, at least, pretty much. So, hey, got to love it. Take a quick break. Weekend roundup in college football next. With baseball playoffs right around the corner, over a month away, and the NFL and college football seasons right on our tail, it's the perfect time of year to get your daily fantasy sports life in order. For Frequency Sake has you covered every single week. Tune in to For Frequency Sake's DFS Deep Dive on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch every Friday evening, and uploaded every Saturday morning on your favorite podcast platform, where Brian and the boys will be giving you the best daily fantasy sports advice for each and every week to help you fatten your wallet this season. Again, on every Friday night live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. And, of course, uploaded on your favorite podcast platform on Saturday mornings. DFS Advice, DFS Deep Dive here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. In addition to bringing fire on the mic, the team at For Frequency Sake is still bringing it online as well. Check out ForFantasySakeQC.com this season for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each and every week of this football season. Again, that is ForFantasySakeQC.com for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each week during the football season. All right, I got a couple games here from the college weekend that I want to touch on. Let's start down south in Arkansas. Bama going to Fayetteville to take on the Razorbacks. It was a game that the question marks going in were, how would Alabama look on the road? This team for the last 2 years, even last year with all the weapons they had. Now, granted, there was a lot of roster turnover, but they really struggled on the road. And you think of games they played, like Auburn last year on the road, at Florida. Those are two games that they really, really struggled in. And this year they got a lot of – or the Texas A&M game they lost. This year they're going to have tough games on the road. They're going to go to – they'll go to LSU. They will go to Tennessee. They obviously here now go to Arkansas. They went to Texas in week two and barely scraped it out in a game they really did not look good at all. This, though, they looked very impressive. Early on, Bryce Young was hitting guys deep. I mean, first play of the game, they come out, play action, deep shot to Colby Prentice. Arkansas has good players on their defense. They got two really good linebackers, Bumper Pool and Drew Sanders. But they're missing guys in their secondary. Their best, probably their best defensive player in general, Jalen Catalon. He's out for the year, been out of the year since for the year since week one. Their top safety. And Bama was able to move the ball. They turned the ball over on their first possession because Holden didn't try to catch it with two hands, and there was probably a missed DPI on the play. But Arkansas, offensively, they weren't able to capitalize. Bama ended up going up two scores. Now, here's the thing. One of the things I hated the most in this game, it's 7-0, and I know it's only 7-0, but early in the game, Sam Pittman has a 4th and inches with a running game that's really good and a quarterback in KJ Jefferson that is 6'3", 240 almost, and can just bulldoze people. You quarterback sneak it or you give it to Rocket Sanders and let him get the first down. They punt it away. Bama comes down the field and scores in like 6 plays to go up a couple scores. Now, Bryce Young gets hurt. The game doesn't really change because Arkansas's defense had horrendous flow in this game when it came to running the football. And there was just nothing that Arkansas, it seemed, that they could do to stop the run. And it was weird because early in the game, they really couldn't get anything running the ball. And Bryce was dominating, passing the football. Let me try to look up some stats here for Bryce and what he had throwing the football. So, obviously, Jalen Milroe comes in, and he was fine. He was fine. But Bryce was 7 for 13 for 137 yards in a quarter and a half, you know? He came out with about 9 minutes left in the second quarter. It was 14-0. They forced the 3-and-out from Arkansas, and Kool-Aid McKinstry had a punt return that set him up inside the 30. And they had a couple drives. They go right down the field, and Jalen Milroe scores. The run game when Milroe came in was very good. It wasn't great early, but then they started cooking. Jahmyr Gibbs finished with 18 carries for 206 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had 2 gashing plays. Milroe had a crazy run. We're going to get to that in a second. He had 91 yards on the ground. Milroe only threw 9 times for 65 yards, completed 4 passes. The other thing that Sam Pittman did that bugged me, it's 21-0. They're driving again. You can't stop the run. You finally get a stop. It'll be four. It's an incomplete pass. It's going to be about 4th and 4 from the 9, but there was a penalty on Bama. That made it, it was 3rd and 4. There's a penalty on Bama on an incomplete pass. Instead of declining the penalty to make it 4th down, they accept it. Next play, screen pass to JoJo Earl. Arkansas's defense was dog shit. They couldn't tackle all game. He scores from 25 yards out. Why the fuck was Sam Pittman declining that penalty? On what planet was that a smart move? What planet? The instant it happened, we're watching the game with Danny, his mom, and Nana, and they're all Arkansas fans, and his mother's side of the family is all from down there. Great people. Shout out to them. When they declined the penalty, I'm like, guys, I hope they score here, and I'm sorry. Because I was, you know, hoping Arkansas would keep it close. I'm not a Bama fan, but I really like Bryce Young. But when he went out, I was like, well, you know, I just hope chaos happens. But when that happened, I was like, guys, I hope Alabama scores here because it'll be funny. They scored, and I laughed my ass off. There's no reason for Pittman to decline that penalty. You think Saban, in a game he's controlling, where the other team's offense can't move the ball for shit, do you think he's going to go for it on fourth down in the red area with a quarterback that he doesn't trust to throw the ball that's a backup and a redshirt freshman? Sam Pittman was out of his mind. They go down. That puts him in the hole 28-0. Then they actually double up. They end the first half with a score. They start the second half with a score. They get a three and out. They come right back down the field, and they, let me try to time this up here. Because they cut it. No. Here's what happens. Let's see. I'm going to try to get this correct. They pretty much had the ball the entire third quarter. So, 28-7. Okay, yeah, here we go. They score to start the first half. They scored in the first half. Now, Arkansas punts in the third, but then Bama punts. Then Arkansas scores a touchdown, 28-14. Then they onside kick it. They get it back. They get down inside the five. They have first and goal from the five. Rocket Sanders run up the middle for no yards. Second down, Rocket Sanders run for 2 yards. Third down, KJ Jefferson run for loss of a yard. Field goal attempt. No creativity. A chance to seize the game. You score there. You cut it to 28-21, and it should have been 24-21, but Sam Pittman's a dumbass and declined a penalty that basically gave Bama a free play to score a touchdown on. Remember that. They only get 3 points. 28-17. Now, granted, you feel a lot better about it because the next play series, Bama goes three and out, and then they snap the punt over the punter's head. I think it hit the up back. Arkansas set up at the three, first play of the series, they score. But then after that, Bama proceeds to have touchdown drives of 5, 1, and 2 plays. They go five, and here's the crazier thing. They score 3 touchdowns in 4 plays. 3rd and 15. It is 28-23. All the momentum is on Arkansas' side. 3rd and 15. The play of the game. You are about to sack Jalen Milroe. He gets loose, and Arkansas, who could not tackle for 60 minutes, gives up a 77-yard run. They are on the doorstep. Next snap, they score, and that's the game. Arkansas then goes 3 and out. Bama gets it back. First play, sweep to the right with Jahmyr Gibbs. Down the sideline, untouched, 72 yards, touchdown. Then Arkansas gets it back. They get down. They kick another field goal again because they're soft. And then Alabama gets it back. First down, they lose a yard. Okay, an extra yard to pad my stats. Jahmyr Gibbs, 3rd straight carry. Boy, they touchdown. Booyah. Deuces. Bye-bye, Arkansas. See you later. Impressive win for Bama. Impressive to see them kind of fix some things and get over the hump. All right, next, Illinois and Wisconsin. What a performance by the Brett Bielema's boys in Madison. 34-10, ass beating, pretty much wire to wire. Now, Wisconsin scored on their opening drive, and then Illinois did punt, but they pinned them deep. And then Graham Mertz throws his first of 2 picks. And from there, Illinois just rolls. Chase Brown, 129 more yards on the ground. Tommy DeVito, another efficient day, 167 yards in the air, 18-24. They don't need him to be special. They just need him to not be the reason they lose games, like their quarterback play over the last few years with Peters and Sikowski and whoever the fuck. Chase Brown, all right. If Illinois goes 9-3, if they, let me just throw this bullshit scenario. One. let's say they go 9-3 and the only losses the rest of the year are Minnesota and Michigan, which in a, you know, could happen, but I don't know. I think 8-4 is the benchmark, but we'll see. If they go 9-3 and Chase Brown leads the country in rushing, Chase Brown's got to get a Heisman. He's got to get an invite to New York, right? No one has seized the moment. Let's say Illinois goes 9-3. They lose to Minnesota. They lose a game they shouldn't. They lose these next two to Illinois or to Iowa and Minnesota. But then they rattle off the rest of their games and win out. But one of those wins is at Michigan, where let's say Chase Brown has 245 and three or four scores, like Kenneth Walker did last year, and they win. Chase Brown's going to New York for the Heisman ceremony, correct? Just want to throw that out there. It's that possibility. But the main thing with this team right now is their defense. They fly to the ball. They have guys at all the levels making plays. Their D-line getting pressure. Their linebackers are flowing, and they're tops in a lot of categories in the country right now. This defense has been absolutely hammered down. This is a 4-1 team that is really good and improving. They should be 5-0, but they goofed the last possession against Indiana. But ever since then, this team has been dominant, and Saturday's their big test. Saturday is a game that where they're at and where they've shown they have been, they should win against Iowa. Will they, though, is the question. They're 3.5-point favorites. I don't know if I have the balls to take them minus the points. I was prepared the last 24 to 48 hours to take Illinois plus whatever was going to be out there, because I didn't think Vegas would give Illinois its due. But I think Illinois absolutely should be favored. They're absolutely better than Iowa. This game could very well be 13-10 or so, 17-10. As long as Illinois doesn't make mistakes, they are going to win Saturday. They just have to not make those backbreaking mistakes. They haven't really made them on offense all year. As long as they can stay away from them, because that defense for Iowa just lives by creating turnovers and living off your mistakes. The Iowa offense is horrendous. The Illinois defense should have its way with them. But as long as the Illinois offense doesn't give the ball into Iowa in short fields and beat themselves, then Illinois really, I think, has a great chance to win on Saturday. And if they beat Iowa to get to 5-1, then you're really going to feel like, okay, we can roll. If they can get to 5-1 and beat Iowa, then you really have to like their chances to be as the favorites in the West, even if they lost to Minnesota. Because I think Minnesota, absolutely, they'll still play. I think they play Penn State as their out-of-division game, and they still would have to play Iowa, which is a team that could give them fits, who knows. But they just lost to Purdue, and it wasn't pretty. So I think Minnesota is a team, even if Illinois couldn't beat them. If Illinois wins the next two games, they're winning the West, unless they just have a collapse down the stretch. But I don't think that would happen. If they win the next two games, they're for real. Now, they're both at home, so it's very, like, we got to prepare that could be a thing. It's just, because it's Illinois, we can't sit here and count them as locks. I think they go 1-1. Even if they go 0-2, it's not the end of the world. Illinois is absolutely in the catbird seat to be a team that be the team that represents the West in the Big Ten championship game. And they probably right now should be considered the betting favorite slightly, because their two toughest games in division are at home. That is the biggest thing. People said all year at the beginning of the year, their toughest games were on the road. Automatic losses, like a Michigan. At the beginning of the year, we would say like a Michigan State, but I think they're going to beat Michigan State, guys. I really do. Wins are there for this Illinois team, man. They are absolutely making the right strides. Love to see it. And hopefully, they can get a win on Saturday against Iowa. Lastly, I want to talk about NC State in Clemson. Impressive win by Clemson. Defense was really good. But I'm upset with NC State. I hate watching college teams especially when the quarterback they have is like once in a generation for that program, and they just run an offense that is absolutely dumb. NC State runs this offense that is predicated on passes to running backs and RPOs when they got an NFL QB that absolutely can sling it. Devin Leary is the QB from North Carolina State. I was kind of up in the air on him because I didn't know. I hadn't watched enough tape. I hadn't seen enough of him live. Saturday night was really the first time I ever got to sit down and invest in him, and I was all in. I'm all in on him being a guy that I would be willing on taking in that second tier of quarterbacks. I might go on a rant here. I don't know. We'll see how far I get into this. But I hate when people talk about certain guys with intangibles. It's like people don't understand how this works. As Greg Cosell said it, man, can you make throws? I have people telling me all offseason and all season how good guys like Will Levis and Trevor Van Dyke or whatever the hell his name is, they are. Devin Leary on that first series made multiple throws I've never seen Will Levis make or TVD make. Bryce Young, the first play of the fucking game against Arkansas, made a throw that I haven't seen Will Levis make that throw. Oh, well, they got guys that are, you know, they have dudes on the outside that can play. I don't give a shit. I saw Justin Herbert make throws at Oregon, and I was like, all right. Now, I was late to the Justin Herbert party, you know, but I hate people that just talk about tools and intangibles because a guy is tall and thick. Thick, like, hey, you know who was thick? Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was thick. You want to know what Sam Darnold is right now? Fucking terrible. A career backup. Okay? You want to know a guy that everyone told me had no intangibles because he's too small? Kyler Murray. Guess what? Dude's one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. You bozos. Maybe you don't know what you're talking about. Okay? All of these guys, because they got thunder thighs and, ooh, they run a system that is already predicated to the NFL. Now, I agree. You look at a team like Miami, their system sucks. But I watched Tony the Tiger Van Dyke or whatever the fuck his name is play. The dude's missing basic wide open dudes on intermediate routes. That dude isn't a fucking NFL quarterback. I'm not this, look, I know I'm a hashtag dumb media guy, what do I know? But I've got two eyes, I know what I'm watching. Devin Leary has it, and watching NC State just waste downs on every series. It's not just one series here or there, it is every fucking series. They are wasting downs by little bullshit flare passes, or these RPOs that have no chance against this defense as fast as Clemson. They have injuries out the ass in the secondary. Their best DB left gets thrown out in the second quarter. Take shots. Get creative. Leary's like third throw of the game. He throws a hole shot down the near sideline. On the button, man. Like, what are we doing? It's not that hard. It's not that hard. I hate it so much. Oh, rant over. Let's talk quickly about DJ Uiagalelei. We got to give him props, man. The apology must be as loud as the disrespect, one once said. DJ was really bad last year, and we all pumped out our chest, beat our chest to say how bad he was. This year, we got to give him props. Has he been great? No. Has he lived up to the 5-star billing, oh, the next guy at Clemson? Not really. But he's been a really good college quarterback this year, and he has made plays. He is showing a lot more composure. He's playing more within himself. I still absolutely despise how the Clemson offense is ran, but listen, I'm just going to despise how the Clemson offense is ran until the day I die. And that's okay. Just okay. That's fine. It's how we move on in life. It's how we, it's just things we just got to accept. All right. Teams have flaws. We accept them. But DJ, I really, really like how he's come along, how he's handled himself, how he has moved on and understood what he, you know, what was poor. And he's taken that next step. I'm interested in how Clemson matches up now against the rest of the top of the country. When you look at the Michigan, the teams that I would probably put in their tier right now, the Michigans, the USCs, those type, the Oklahoma States, those types of teams. I don't know how they match up. I think Tennessee even. I think they're maybe a little too physical for some of them because defensively, man, when they're full go, they are tough. They're tough as nails. And their offense is much better this year at ball control. They've got a good, a better offensive line. Will Shipley has been really good. They have a couple receivers that are meh. They're nice. Ngata is solid. I really like him. Not as like a pro, but as a guy that, for what they do, this, it's a team that runs a lot of quick stuff and fade routes, and Ngata just goes and gets it, man. At the end of the day, like, you need him on a team like that. the old Mike Williams special. And DJ is a guy that can perfectly and efficiently run their offense. Quarterback run game. He can throw. He's starting to develop a nice deep ball. He's making good decisions. The lack of potential oomph in their offense and, like, pure just we need to score 45 in a game to win, not easy. It's going to be hard to have that. But I don't know if they're going to have to do that against, unless they run into, I mean, would they have to do that against any other team other than Ohio State? Because, okay, even with their DBs healthy, their DBs aren't good, but their front seven is just immaculate. So Ohio State probably wouldn't be able to run the ball well, but CJ's gonna find them boys out there, and they're going to do work. But, you know, can you hold them enough? Can you get pressure? Ohio State might be the only team, honestly, that they can't match up with. Because Bama doesn't have the intangibles to give a team with that good a defense problems. Now, they're going to kind of get a little bit of a test like that this weekend with Texas A&M. But even still, they'll have the ability to call such a different game because Texas A&M's offense is just inept. It's like a JV team. But for Clemson versus some of these top teams, it's going to be do they have the buff with their stuff to be able to throw with these guys? I think they could with Georgia because I think they can match their physicality. I think they could with Bama because I don't know if Bama could match their physicality, and they don't have the stuff from the last couple of years that set them apart, which is the speed and the playmaking on the outside. This is the best quarterback they've had in a couple years, obviously with Bryce. Like, he's about two levels maybe to an extent, but he's better than Mac Jones, obviously, but Mac had the most loaded team. I can't say that. That team the year before with Tua was just stupid loaded, but like, with Bryce, this team is really dumbed down, and a lot of times I think against better teams this year, it's going to have to be Bryce making a lot of plays to save them, and right now he's hurt, so who knows. But for Clemson, I think they are a team that could. They very well could be the last team standing. Are they going to run the table in the ACC? I said if they get through NC State, man, I don't know who's going to make them slip up, and I know Florida State got them last year, but they got to go to Florida State. But are they really going to drop that game? I don't think Florida State's going to be able to block them. And that could be a game where Clemson can win. And then outside of that, they don't really have another test in the regular season. And whoever they get in the ACC title game is going to suck because the Coastal is terrible. So they could get Pitt, and I don't think they're that good. They could play UNC. Who's okay. I love Drake May, but and Josh Downs and some of the receivers, but they don't have no one in that division is going to make Clemson sleep, is going to make Clemson lose sleep at night. Like, real quick, I just want to go through the rest of their games, because it's honestly abysmal, the ACC right now. All the best teams in the ACC are in the Atlantic. The Coastal's a mess, man. The Coastal's a mess. So Clemson goes to Boston College, to Florida State, and then they get Syracuse at home, and then to Notre Dame. So it's a little bit of a shaky stretch, but like after that, they get Louisville at home, Miami at home, South Carolina at home. They'll ragdoll all of them. I don't think Notre Dame's going to do enough offensively to make them sweat. Maybe, though, they can keep it low scoring enough to make it interesting, but I don't know. Maybe by then Notre Dame will be playing better, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. All right, we'll take another break. Elite Eight's up next. Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com. All right, as we always like to say, when big stuff's about to happen, enough bullshit. Let's get to it, son. Let's get real. It is time for the Week 4 NFL Elite Eight. Not a lot of strong candidates this week, but we are learning how deep this league is, and we are learning that I think there's starting to become a gap in the tiers in the NFL. Let's start. We'll go 8-1 as always, and we'll talk about that. Number 8, the Cincinnati Bengals. I believe they're starting to make strides. Their defense is playing better. When you really break it down, man, their defense has so many good players. They got two great edge rushers in Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard. They got some good interior D linemen. DJ Reader is really good. I love their linebackers, especially Logan Wilson. And Shadobia Awuzie is having a really good all-pro type season to start the year at corner. He's been really good for them. You had Jesse Bates, Von Bell at DB. Their defense is tough. And offensively, it's going to come together. The things I was hating on Thursday against the Dolphins, their offensive play calling was just so vanilla. But they were able to get a win on a Thursday night and against a really good team. So they're still on track. If they win Sunday against Baltimore, then I really feel like we are moving to where we thought the Bengals could be at the beginning of the season. And these three games where they won are going to be so far removed from the first two games where they lost. Number 7, the Tampa Bay Bucks. Now, you might be wondering, why do I have them here? They just got absolutely dog-walked. I think it's a one-off. I don't think their defense is going to get poked around like that again. I think it was just Mahomes and a freight train, a pissed off Chiefs team a week after that they probably felt like they were embarrassed, where they got their pants pulled down in front of the classroom against the Colts, and everyone laughed at them because they goofed up a little bit. They had holes in their underwear, and it just wasn't pretty. I think the Chiefs took a lot of that stuff personally, and they came out on a mission on Sunday against the Bucks. Offensively, it's coming together. They were able to move the ball. The offensive line has been better than expected, even though it's got a lot of guys that is, you know, they're holding it together with duct tape right now. But it's starting to, it's coming a little bit, and they got guys healthy. And they have depth at receiver now when guys play. You add guys like Russell Gage and Cole Beasley, Scotty Miller, Brandon Perriman, in as depth guys behind Julio, Godwin, and Mike Evans. That wide receiver room, it's like, damn, we got a lot of weapons. So Leonard Fournette's still playing well. The white kid at running back seems like they're going to start trusting him more and more. Offense is going to come along. Watch out. That's when this Bucks team can really close the gap in the NFC. Number 6, the 49ers. A lot of this is defense-based. A lot of this is where I trust DeMeco Ryan having that side of the ball figured out. And eventually, the offense will catch up to it. And they are going to be where I think that they are the team that I believe could very well be the second-best team in the NFC by the end of the season. Right now, I have them at 6. The Niners coming off that Monday night win against the Rams. Now, number 5, I'm a little... I'm a little indifferent about these guys, and it's the Green Bay Packers. Part of me wanted me to have them here, and a part of me wanted to move them down and out, because that Sunday game, the first half, it was everything you hate about this team, all wrapped up into one. Rodgers making mistakes, the offense doing things that piss him off. They're just extremely disorganized, struggling with a team they should absolutely handle, all of those things. But then the second half, I was like, okay, these are improvements, and they rolled offensively. Now, granted, it was tight, and it was a tough game, but Rodgers was dialed in the second half. He was making throws all over the field. I said it last night, and I'll say it now. Romeo Doubs is going to be a superstar in this league. I can't believe teams like the one that is in the state of Illinois that think that is a quote-unquote professional football team passed on a guy like that multiple times. I can't believe a lot of teams passed on him until the fourth round. It's like guys need to learn how to scout players that play in college football. But what do I know? Again, just a dumb media guy over here. Romeo Doubs is the real deal. By the end of the year, he will be their wide receiver one, and I think that will pay dividends. A.J. Dillon the last 2 weeks has kind of been a no-show. Okay, weird. Aaron Jones, still been solid. Run game's got to be good. O-line's getting put back together. It's the good and the bad, because those are the good things. The bad is the first half. Rodgers being inaccurate. Coward says it, and it's almost true. They really sometimes can only win one way against certain teams. And we'll see. Are they going to have that win this year that kind of makes me a believer? Like last year, they had a couple of them early. Week 2 or week 3, they had that win at San Francisco. Week 8, they went into Arizona with a bunch of guys banged up on a Thursday night and won. Wins like that were like, oh, I'm sold. I'm bought in now. Like, I can believe in this team. And then, you know, they pissed on my face in the NFC divisional round. But what do I know? So it's going to be hard for me to fully buy into this team. And they're definitely, like, let me pull up their schedule real quick. Because I want to see if I can guess when this team is going to let me down. It'll probably be Sunday in London. They're going to let me down by not being able to pull away from the Giants, who are a team that probably won't have a quarterback. But the more but there's a chance, like, if Saquon Barkley just runs wild like Hulk Hogan in the 80s on him, like Hulkamania in the 80s, I should say, then, you know, I'm going to wake up about 9:30 to get on the show at 10, turn that game on, see it's 13-10, and Barkley's already got 150 scrimmage yards at halftime. And I'm going to be like, shit, maybe the Packers are not deserving of being up here. But, you know, who knows? Who knows when it comes to some of this stuff? I'm pulling up their schedule now. Let's see here. After this, they get the Jets at home, then the Commanders. Shit, they could be 6-1. We're not going to know much about them. Maybe the Jets could give them something. Maybe. I doubt Washington will. But then they go to Buffalo. And boy, oh boy, if everything is cool and bananas, and you're 6-1, 5-2 at worst, go to Buffalo, and then get dog-walked, then it's like, all right, we don't have any faith in you whatsoever. So, this Packer team, it's going to be very hard. Like, over the weeks, there's a chance that they're just going to stay here at 5. And teams that are below them will jump them. And teams that are above them that could fall behind them probably won't. You know, they're either going to fall to 5 and the Packers move down one, or they'll, like, go from, like, 3-6 and the Packers will just keep staying at 5. Because, like, right now, I can't move them much higher because I'm going to save. Right now, the top 4 is reserved for teams that I really think are a bit of a step above the NFL. And we'll get to it right now. Number 4, the Miami Dolphins. Oh, but Tua's out. Oh, this. Oh, that. Shut up. On a Thursday night, on the road, short turnaround, they were, with 2 minutes left, down 5. They had the ball just outside the red zone. And all of you were thinking that were watching that game, don't lie to yourself, holy shit, they're going to fucking pull this off. Because I sure did. I thought they were going to win. And then they fuck up a hot route, miscommunication. Teddy throws a pick. They don't get the ball back. And Bob's your uncle. They lose by 9 or 11, whatever the fuck it was. Anywho, I think that this team is still really good. And the one thing that concerns me is if Teddy falls off and is a complete and utter disaster. As long as Teddy can keep the car on the road, he can do a lot of the stuff that he excels at, quick stuff, throwing some deep 7 routes, things like that. As long as like he can keep those things going and the run game can produce and the O-line holds up and they stay healthy, like as long as Tua's out, Teddy, if he keeps this thing straight, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. And they're going to be favored in a lot of games. And I think as long as you can get Tua back in maybe a month or so, let Teddy roll. At worst, you go 2-2 and you're 5-3. And in the AFC, in the NFL right now, I should say, who do you think is going to go on some 4-game massive winning streak run that's going to make a 5-3 team seem obsolete? It's going to be hard to believe that that's the case at this moment with how everyone is kind of trading blows right now. I think the Dolphins have a really good roster. They've done all these different things right in between the lines, and their coaching is really good. I think that this is not exactly the situation Teddy Bridgewater stepped into in 2019 when Drew Brees went out for a month and a half and they didn't lose in New Orleans, but I think it's pretty damn close to that because I think McDaniel is a really good and creative coach. Not on the level of Sean Payton, but hey, he could be. And I think that they're going to be able to really withstand these situations, and I think they're going to be fine, and I think that they're at the tail end of the field that's cut above the rest of the league. Number 3 is the Buffalo Bills. Big ups. They finally were able to win one of those tight nail biters. They were able to win a sloppy game. You know, again, this is the team that we like to say is a dome team that plays in the elements. Pretty much, they're a dome team that plays in the worst weather city in the NFL. And they were able to win a game in the slop in a come-from-behind fashion where they had to get a little creative, and they couldn't do it in this fancy, we're going to just score a billion points on you way. And I'm impressed with that because in the NFL, you need to have an off-speed pitch. You need to be able to beat teams multiple ways. You need to have more than one thing that you can bring to the party that, you know, you can come to the party with this awesome pie that everybody loves, but at the end of the day, if we definitely know that we're missing a protein entree, like we need some sort of fancy chicken and cheese dip, and we are asking you to bring it, and you either don't even do it, or you do and you suck at it, we're going to be like, meh, maybe this friend isn't all worth what we thought of. But then also, if you're also judging your friends on what they bring to your potlucks, then maybe that's a you problem, not the person problem. Just saying. But regardless, when it comes to the Bills, that was my Colin Cowherd attempt there. I think I did about 40% good there. It started well, and I didn't bring it home, but that's fine. For the Buffalo Bills, it's cool when everything's going right, and you're just able to overwhelm teams and dominate them. Can you win a game where the other team jabs you back, where you make mistakes and you have to overcome them? The fact that they did that on Sunday, big ups, impressed, good win, you're number 3. All right, time to piss a lot of people off that aren't named DJ Jarvis. Because the Philadelphia Eagles are at 2, and that means you know who's at 1. It was a coin flip between the Eagles and the team that is first. The Eagles, I believe, have the best offensive and defensive line combination in the NFL. I also, and look, my boy Big Swagoo said it, Marcus Spears. My guy John Rivers, we always talk about it on Twitter. I'm a big boy, so you know I love the trenches. And as Marcus Spears said, it's all about the trenches. So why does a team that I think has the best O&D line play in the league? Not number 1. It's simply because they don't have the impressive win that the team that is first, which is the Kansas City Chiefs, had on Sunday. We'll get to the Chiefs in a minute. But let's start with talk about the Eagles. Their offensive and defensive line play is just overwhelming right now. Teams know what they want to do. They know what they are. This is like what I've said. I'm going to say it all the time. The things I love about their offense, they know what they are. They know they want to do. They are true to themselves, and they stick with it. I love that in a game that had elements and they got down early, it was the first time this season when someone kind of kicked them in the nuts a little bit. Said, bring it. Bring it. We're here to play, are you? They got down early, and Jalen was a little, it wasn't great. Had a couple bad bounces. How would they react? First time they were trailing big, maybe the first time they trailed all year? I don't know. I don't think so. I think Detroit scored first. But regardless, like first time they were down double digits easily all season long. And all of a sudden, start chipping away. And old Jalen Hurts starts making plays. And here they come and they start rolling. It showed me that, again, there's levels to them. There are elements to them that make them good. And I love the fact that they are able to adjust offensively, to keep on going, to stay true to themselves, know what they are, and be able to win in any conditions. And Jalen makes plays. That offense makes plays. And the thing I'm most impressed with right now, other than that right now, is just how absolutely dominating and overwhelming their offensive and defensive line is, because, boy, oh, boy, it's good. And number one, Chiefs, 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 Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs, boys and girls. Sunday night was a masterclass in how to whoop somebody's ass. Kansas City, from start to finish, put it on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Patrick Mahomes, once again, showed why sometimes it's just kind of dumb to really discuss who we think the best quarterback in the league is. As much as I love Josh Allen, as much as I love a guy like Justin Herbert, as much as I love a guy like Trevor Lawrence who's figuring it out, it's Mahomes right now until someone can take it away from him. And no one really has. And it wasn't even the fact that he was making, he didn't have this 400 yards, six touch, whatever. He just makes plays, and it's the combination of him with Reed and the winning pedigree and the guys they have on their team and the elements of their team, and they're number one right now until proven otherwise. Are there teams that I trust more than them in certain situations in going on? Absolutely. I would trust the Eagles situationally more than they do, more than them. Because, like, in short yardage situation, the Chiefs are dog shit, and I hate watching them try to do it. Sunday, their gadget plays worked. Chiefs fans know, and people that listen to this podcast know, I hate the Chiefs gimmick stuff. It's dumb. They're terrible at short yardage. They know it, and they get fancy. And I actually personally love it when it bites them in the ass. Is there a team that I think has a better knockout punch than they do right now because they don't have the explosiveness that they've had in recent years? Of course, it's the Buffalo Bills. But it's hard for me to go into a game right now and say, when you say, all right, who do you expect to get it done on this day? And it's hard for me to pick against 15 for the Chiefs and that team from Kansas City, Missouri, and the team that wears red and white. It's hard for me to pick against that. It is just hard for me to pick against that. They're really good. And the four teams that I have right now, Chiefs, Eagles, Bills, Dolphins, I think are clearly a step ahead of the rest of this group of eight, and I think it's a step ahead of the rest of the league. Now, there are teams right on the tail of this top eight. Teams like Baltimore, before tonight, the Rams. I think the Jags are still in that conversation. There's a lot of teams that could make this list, but these are the eight that I saw fit, and going into next week, who knows? Who knows where teams could be? I think all eight of these teams, the only one that has like a ridiculously tough game is Cincy. So there's a chance that all eight of these Could be the first week where we have a second straight eight-some make it through. We'll see. But from the top, Chiefs 1, Eagles 2, Bills 3, Dolphins 4, Packers 5, Niners 6, Bucks 7, and the Bengals at 8. Take a break. Wrap it up next. For Fantasy Sake has teamed up with Route 96 Boutique to raise a little more cash for Toys for Tots this season. From September 11th until the end of November, 10% off of all purchases made with Route 96 on Sundays will be donated to us for our Toys for Tots drive. At Route 96, they believe in girl power. They want a place that people of all shapes and sizes can shop and feel empowered and beautiful. They want you to be the best you possible, and they are committed to bringing you different styles while also providing some basics to express the true you. You can find them on Facebook and at Route96Boutique.com. Again, that's Route96Boutique.com. That's going to do it for this one. Thank you all for listening. Shout out to DJ and Doug for getting us up and going. Doug, the last couple days has been busy, but hopefully things can cool down for him as of late. Check us out again. This is going to be a day where we might hit 5 days on the week and 5 shows, because definitely tomorrow night we are going to have at least one half of the Major League Baseball postseason prediction show. There's a very good chance that we're going to split it into two parts, and you'll get American League one night, National League the next, depending. Maybe National League, then American League. I'm not sure. Depends on who the guys want to start. But Mac and Nick are going to join us for that. And then on Thursday, of course, or Friday, that'll be Wednesday and Thursday. And then Friday, of course, will be the Sinister Six and Thursday Night Football segment. We're going to talk. We're going to change the Sinister Six up a little bit this week. We're going to do a little bit more different in the delivery of it. And I think I'm going to like the process a little bit more. The goal is going to be for Mac and I to try to agree on all 6 picks, because I want us to start really hammering home. And I think we're close. We just got to have talks, hard talks, about principle and going and betting the right side. We were 3-3 this week, and listen, two of the three losses. Look, our three losses. I think I would have bet the Washington side every time, because UCLA looked like shit the first month of the season, and I hadn't seen them play that well, and then they did. That type of stuff happens. I don't know about the Browns, because at this point, trusting Jacoby Brissett. Oh well, but definitely I would have taken the Jags and the points 10 out of 10 times. I don't regret taking those sides. Maybe a little bit with the Browns because of Brissett playing, so I maybe should have known better. But I don't regret the losses this week. Way to recover by getting the Niners minus the points tonight. That was a big win for us. So otherwise, the next couple nights, we are going to have, like we said, we will have the American League and then the National League, or one or the other. I don't know the order yet, but probably going to be split up into two parts. One for each night for the Major League Baseball postseason preview. And then we will have the on Friday, we'll have the Thursday night recap, which is Broncos-Colts. Hopefully that game isn't a snooze fest, but it's an important game. It could be. It very well is our first Loser Leaves Town match, where either the loser's coach is definitely on their way out, and does the loser of this game, can we put a big red X next to them for the playoffs? Because it's either the Broncos at 2-3 or the Colts at 1-3-1. And neither are going to be good, man. Neither are going to be good. And then, of course, in that episode, we'll have the Sinister Six. So, until then, thank you all for listening. Like, share, subscribe, tell all your friends, etc., etc., etc. This has been the Educated Ignorance Podcast. I've been Joe the Show Winkle. As always, if you ain't got your game, you best pass the sticks. Until next time, we will see you. Take care. Brush your hair. Peace.